Hare Krishna. Reading from My Glorious Master, Hong Kong, 1974, Part 2. Continuing Prabhupada's walk on the peak in Hong Kong. Feet on the ground. Prabhupada pointed to a shiny object on the ground as we walked. I picked it up. It was an American dime. That means 10 cents. Prabhupada indicated that I should keep it, so I happily put the coin in my pocket. My comment. One university course I attended during my student life was taught by a well-known American philosopher. He used to quote a saying that stuck in my mind. It's all right to have your head in the clouds as long as your feet are on the ground. I understood this to mean that we can be as philosophical and theoretical as we like, but unless we are practical, our philosophizing and theorizing are useless. Prabhupada was a learned and realized philosopher, but was always practical. His feet were on the ground. He was experienced in the world, and he was meticulously observant. He used everything in Krishna service, even an insignificant dime that found its way into the pocket of a grateful disciple. Swallowing not mustard oil, but pride. Prabhupada's servant told me he was out of mustard oil and that Prabhupada needed it for his massage. I quickly left the hotel, found the shop selling Indian groceries, and bought a liter of oil. I got back just in time. Prabhupada was already dressed in his gumption when I sat down to watch the massage. Before it started, Prabhupada looked at the golden fluid with a steady eye. He then placed his palm over the opening and turned the bottle over, allowing a few drops to spill into his palm. Smelling the oil, he looked at me and announced, "This is not mustard oil." "Yes, it is, Prabhupada," I knew, because I had just purchased it. "This is not mustard oil," Prabhupada said emphatically. I told him how I went to the store, asked for mustard oil, and was given this oil. "This is what the shopkeeper gave me." "That may be so," Prabhupada said with finality, "but this is not mustard oil." My comment. I had not yet been to India or experienced the clever dealings of Indian shopkeepers. Prabhupada, however, recognized that I had been cheated. I felt foolish because he had immediately detected the defect in my purchase. Pride, no matter how many times it must be swallowed, never seems to lose its bitter taste. Following Prabhupada. Just before he and his entourage left Hong Kong, Prabhupada asked me to bring some Chinese devotees to the Mayapur festival. I agreed to try my best. As a gesture of affection, I bought Pradyumna, Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, a warm jacket, and I bought Prabhupada a case of pure Australian ghee. We all then left for Kai Tak Airport. Prabhupada sat in an airport chair waiting for his flight to be called. David, a young Chinese boy, came close to Prabhupada and sat near his feet. "Prabhupada, I love you," he said. Prabhupada smiled affectionately at the boy and began to pat his head and stroke his face. Prabhupada then looked up at me and motioned to David, "Then follow him." My comment. Prabhupada's instructing young, sentimental David to follow me thrust on me the heavy responsibility of properly representing Prabhupada. The ghee was for Prabhupada's cooks. Pure ghee is scarce in India. But when I arrived in Calcutta a month later, I saw many of the green ghee cans in Gaugamuni Swami's room. I was furious, thinking that Gaugamuni had somehow or another, commandeered them from Prabhupada for his own use. Years later, however, I was satisfied to learn that Prabhupada had sold the ghee to Gaugamuni Swami. This is the next chapter, Mayapur, 1974. Mercy on entry. I wrote Prabhupada from Hong Kong and told him I would attend the Mayapur festival as he desired. I also mentioned that I would bring several Hong Kong devotees, some of whom were Chinese. We purchased the least expensive tickets to Calcutta on Air Burma. There was a one-night stopover in Rangoon. It was easy to get transit visas for Burma, but we hit a snag with the one Indian visa we required. At that time, British Commonwealth citizens didn't require Indian visas. Four of us carried Commonwealth passports, and as an American, I can enter India for 1 month without a visa. But Young Pak Hay, however, carried only Hong Kong identity papers, required an Indian visa. He applied to the Indian consulate, but the consulate, after a month of call back tomorrows, did not comply. We decided that Young Pak Hay would try to enter India without a visa. Our flight and stopover in Burma went well. The friendly and lackadaisical Air Burma officials in Rangoon didn't bother to check for valid Indian visas before we boarded our Rangoon-Calcutta flight. Krishna's mercy, I thought. But I wondered about the next and most crucial step. We landed in Calcutta and stood in line. One by one, we refugees from Hong Kong's intense materialism passed through immigration. I stood behind Young Pak Hay. He handed his papers to the white-uniformed immigration official, who intently flipped through each page. The official looked surprised and called over a second official. As they conferred, they jointly flipped through the pages of Young Pak Hay's papers. They then called over two officials from Air Burma, and all four again flipped through each page of his identity papers. Finally, they concluded that he had no visa and prohibited his entry. We had come so far. Could Krishna probably be allowing Indian immigration to refuse Young Pak Hay to see Prabhupada, Sri Dhammayapur, and Sri Vrindavan Dham? Young Pak Hay was Chinese with almond eyes and straight black hair. He was dressed in a dhoti and kurta. I said to an official, "Preaching Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's message throughout the world is your duty, but we have taken it up. You should let him in. He is a devotee of your religion. See how he is dressed? See? He has japa mala, kanti mala, and tilak. He is chanting Hare Krishna. He is a devotee of your Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You must let him in." By this time, a host of white uniformed immigration officials with black shoulder pads and a ray of golden bars and stars had arrived. Several spoke loudly and others walked off in a huff and then quickly returned. Others stood at a distance, pointing at the two of us. Official after official flipped through each page of Young Pak Hay's papers, passing them from one to another. I remembered the BBT newsletter that was sent to all temples from Los Angeles. Although the information was basically meant for Americans, it nevertheless advertised that landing permits would be granted on arrival. Visas were not required. I pulled out the paper and thrust it into the group of immigration officers who passed it around, each holding the paper close and carefully reading. Landing permits will be granted on arrival. Visas not required. We argued our case with fresh energy. We have done nothing wrong. Why should we be penalized? We were simply following instructions. Please, we are requesting you. The officials again spoke loudly amongst themselves. Their animated discussions continued until the group gradually drifted off to a nearby office. We were then directed to a couch and asked to wait for some time. Both Young Pak Hay and I chanted on our beads, wondering how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy would be manifest. Could it be that the Lord's desire that Young Pak Hay be refused entry? We could not say, but we sat, chanted, and tried to be patient. Through the glass window in the immigration hall, we viewed a large group of devotees from the West. Their flights had arrived both earlier and later than ours, and they milled about, waiting for us to clear immigration so that the buses could leave for Mayapur. I saw Jagadish, my old college friend from Buffalo, Jayatirtha, whom I had met years ago in Los Angeles on my way to Japan, Kirtananda Swami, who had arrived loaded with milk sweets for Prabhupada from New Vrindavan and tens of others. I felt like a ghost as I observed the devotees through the window, viewing life and possessing desires, but unable to interact with the real world and my fellow ISKCON devotees. The bus drivers finally decided not to wait. We will all meet soon in Mayapur, I thought. But we were now alone, dependent on Krishna's mercy, waiting for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's decision to be delivered through the immigration officials. We sat and chanted for hours. Finally, the two Air Burma officials walked towards us. They were smiling. "They will let you in," the shorter and more official of the two began. "But they have one emergency fund that they keep in case of some difficulty, if some difficulty comes amongst them. They said they will appreciate if you could make some contribution to that fund." "How much contribution?" I asked. "As you like," he replied. I quickly pulled out the 200 rupee notes that I had acquired in Hong Kong and expressed that the officials had been so kind. Both Air Burma men shook their heads back and forth in appreciation and accompanied us through the immigration channel to freedom. "India, we're home, young Pakhei," I said as I wondered about the peculiarities of our entry. We decided to spend the night in the Calcutta temple and travel to Mayapur the following morning. We hailed a taxi and sped to ISKCON on Albert Road. As soon as we arrived in the small temple, we were informed that Prabhupada was there in his rooms. We raced past the temple room and saw him sitting behind a low wooden desk. Cushions extended over the entire floor and were covered in clean, tight, white sheets. A middle-aged Indian man, a guest, sat opposite Prabhupada. I offered Prabhupada my obeisances from outside the door. Prabhupada saw me and immediately waved me to enter. "How many have you brought?" he asked, his enthusiasm like that of a young boy. My comment: Prabhupada was pleased that we were successful in bringing devotees from Hong Kong to ISKCON's first major international Gopurnima festival. He proudly informed the Indian gentleman that even the Chinese were becoming devotees. Hare Krishna. We shall end here. Hare Krishna.